Sir. Sufis, the People of the Path, Volume 1. Talk from Sufism, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 16.
The first question. Why do we forget our divinity? What is the meaning of this? You have not forgotten it. You have never known it. So how can you forget it? Forgetfulness is possible only once you have known it. And once known, it is never forgotten. You are divine, but you have not known it yet. In fact, because you are divine, that's why it is so difficult to know it. It is at the very heart of your being. If it was something outside you, you must have encountered it by now. It was something objective, you could have seen it. But it is not outside, and it is not an object. It is your subjectivity. It is not something to be seen. It is hidden in the seer. It is a witnessing. Unless you go behind yourself, you will not be able to know it. There are three things in the world. One is the world of the objects, things that surrounds you. Closer to it, when you come towards yourself, is the world of thoughts, dreams and desires that too surrounds you. That's what ordinarily you call the inner world. It is not inner, it is still outer. There are two kinds of outsides, one that you see with open eyes and one that you see with closed eyes, but both are outside. Because whatsoever can be seen must be outside. To be seen, it has to be outside. It has to be different than you. The object has to be different from the subject. And then the third, the world of your innermost core, your subjectivity. From where you go on seeing, to come to that, is to realize one's divinity. One has to become a witness to objects, to thoughts, and by witnessing by and by, a moment comes when the turning happens, when there is no object and no thought left in your consciousness is pure, it takes a turn, a 180-degree turn. When there is nothing to be seen, the seer starts seeing itself. Remember, I am only using words which are not adequate anymore. The seer starts seeing himself are not right words. Because again, the words indicate a division, the seer and the seen, and now there is no division. There is only you and you and you. There is not something that is seen and something that is being seen. It is pure consciousness. Divinity means pure consciousness. You will have to come from the world of objects, first to the world of thoughts, and then you will have to take another step. You will have to drop thinking, let thoughts disappear, let there be nothingness. And in that nothingness, the turning happens. You cannot do it. You can only do two things. You can close your eyes to the world, and you can close your consciousness to the constant traffic of the thoughts. That's all you have to do. Then the third thing happens on its own. Suddenly you are aware you are a God. awareness is what God is. But when you are aware, in a sense you have disappeared. You are no more there. The old ego is no more there. You cannot even say I. Because the I depends on things and thoughts. The I is constituted of things and thoughts. When all the bricks of things and thoughts have disappeared, the building of the I also disappears. There is pure emptiness. That's what Buddha calls anatta, no selfness. At the very core of the self, at the innermost shrine, you will not find yourself. And that's how one finds oneself. When the self is lost, the self is found. That's why at this point, all great masters become contradictory and paradoxical. Jesus says, if you want to find yourself, lose yourself. If you want to lose yourself, then go on clinging with yourself. Very paradoxical. Those who cling will lose, and those who are ready to lose will attain. You ask me, why do we forget our divinity? No, you have not forgotten. One never forgets. You have not known at all in the first place. Once known, it is known forever. But I am not saying that you are not divine. You are divine. So when we say that one has forgotten, the word forgotten is used metaphorically. It is not very true, factual. Nobody can forget. A Buddha can never become anything else than a Buddha. He cannot forget. He knows. He knows even while he is asleep. There is no way to forget it. Once known, it is known eternally. But we have never known it. And we have been it always and always. From the very beginning, we have been it. But we have not allowed our energy to turn upon itself. You must have seen old symbols. Egyptian symbol is there. The snake turning upon itself. A circle of a snake. And the snake has its own tail in its mouth. That's what knowing is. The snake has its own tail in his mouth. It is a complete circle. The two ends meeting. When you turn upon yourself, the circle is complete. That's why in many mystery traditions, circles is the symbol of ultimate attainment. Right now, you are not a circle, you are a line. You go from yourself, but you never come to yourself. The ray of your consciousness goes on and on. It is linear, one-dimensional. This is what the samsara is, the world. The linear consciousness. Your consciousness goes on moving in a line and goes on moving in a line. It has been moving that way for millions of years. When it starts becoming a circle, it starts moving backwards. It starts moving back home. And one day suddenly strikes itself, falls upon itself, then there is knowing. And that knowing is never forgotten. You are God, but you have not recognized the facts. The recognition is missing. Not that you have forgotten it. The second question, why do I feel fear when somebody comes close to me? everybody feels fear more or less. That's why people don't allow others to come very close. That's why people avoid love. Sometimes in the very name of love, they go on avoiding love. People keep each other at a distance. Only so far they allow. Then the fear arises. What is the fear? The fear is that the other may be able to see your emptiness if he comes too close. It has nothing to do with the other. You have never been able to accept your inner emptiness. That is the fear. You have made a very, very decorated surface. You have a beautiful face. And you have a good smile. And you talk well. And you are very articulate. And you sing well. And you have a beautiful body. And a beautiful persona. But these are on the surface. So behind them is simple emptiness. You are afraid if somebody comes too close, he will be able to see beyond the mask, beyond your painted face. He will be able to see beyond your smiles. He will be able to see beyond your words. And that frightens. And you know that there is nothing else. You are just a surface. That is the fear. You don't have any depth. And not that you cannot have the depth. You can have it. But the first step you have not taken. The first step is to accept this inner emptiness with joy and go into it. Don't avoid your inner emptiness. If you avoid your inner emptiness, you will avoid people coming closer to you. If you rejoice in your emptiness, you will be completely open and you will invite people to come close to you and have a look into your innermost shrine. Because accepted, the same emptiness has a different quality. Rejected, it has a different quality. In your mind is the difference. If you reject it, it looks like death. If you accept it, the same thing becomes the very source of life. Only through meditation you will be able to allow others to come close to you. Only through meditation, when you have started feeling your inner emptiness as joy, as celebration, as song, when your inner emptiness no more freaks you out, when your inner emptiness no more frightens you, when your inner emptiness is a solace, is a shelter, is a refuge, is a rest, and whenever you are tired, you simply drown into your inner emptiness, you disappear there. When you have started loving your inner emptiness and the joy that arises out of it, thousands of lotuses flower in that emptiness. They float in the lake of emptiness. But you are so afraid of being empty that you don't look at it. You make every effort to avoid it. You will listen to the radio, you will see the movie, you will look at the TV, you will read the newspaper, the detective story, something. But you will continuously be avoiding your inner emptiness. When tired, then you will fall asleep and you will dream. But you never face it. You never hold it close to you. You never hug it. That's the reason. You ask, why do I feel fear when somebody comes close to me? It is a great insight that has happened to you. Very few people are aware of it, and everybody feels fear when somebody comes very close to you. Closeness is not liked. You allow people closeness only very conditionally. She is your wife, then you allow her to sleep on your bed, to be with you in the night. But still, you keep an invisible wall between you and the wife. The wall is invisible, but it is there. If you want to see it, observe it, you will find it. Very transparent wall, a glass wall. But it is there. You remain private to yourself, your wife remains private to herself. Your privacies never meet. You have your secrets, she has her secrets. You are not really open and available to each other. Even in love, you don't allow the other to come really into you. You don't allow the other to penetrate you. And remember, if you allow the other to penetrate you, there is great bliss. When two lovers penetrate each other's body, there is a physical orgasm. When two minds penetrate each other, there is a psychological orgasm. And when two spirits penetrate each other, there is a spiritual orgasm. You may not even have heard about the other two. Even the first is a rarity. Very few people attain to the real physical orgasm. They have forgotten about it. They think ejaculation is orgasm. So many men believe that they have orgasm. And because women don't ejaculate, not at least visibly, 80% women think that they don't have any orgasm. But ejaculation is not orgasm. It is a very local release, sexual release. It is not orgasm. A release is a negative phenomenon. You simply lose energy. An orgasm is a totally different thing. It is a dance of energy, not a release. It is an ecstatic state of energy. The energy comes to become a flow. And it is all over the body. It is not sexual. It is physical. Each cell and each fiber of your body throbs with new joy. It is rejuvenated. There is great peace that follows it. But people don't know even the physical orgasm. So what to talk about? How to talk about the psychological orgasm? When you allow somebody to come very close to you, a friend, a beloved, a son, a father, a master. It does not matter what kind of relationship. But if you allow somebody so close that your minds start overlapping, penetrating, then there is something so beyond the physical orgasm. It is a jump. The physical orgasm was beautiful, but nothing compared to the psychological orgasm. Once you have known the psychological orgasm, physical orgasm by and by loses all attraction. It is a very poor substitute. But even psychological orgasm is nothing compared to the spiritual orgasm. When two spirits, and by spirits I mean two emptinesses, two zeros overlap. Remember, two bodies can only touch, cannot overlap because they are physical. How can two bodies be in the same space? It is impossible. So at the most you can have a close touch. Two bodies can only touch. Even in sexual love, two bodies only touch. The penetration is very superficial. It is not more than a touch. Because two physical objects cannot exist in the same place. If I am sitting here in this chair, then in the same place nobody else can sit. If a stone is lying in a certain place, you cannot put another thing in the same place. The space is occupied. Physical objects occupy space. So two physical objects can only touch. That is the misery of love. If you know only physical love, you will be always miserable. Because you will be only touching, and the deep desire is to become one. And two physical objects cannot become one. It is not possible. A better communion happens with two psyches. They can come more closer. But even then, two thoughts cannot occupy the same space because thoughts are subtle things. They can touch far better. They can get intertwined far better than two things. Things are very solid. Thoughts are very liquid. It is like two stones coming together. That's what happens when two lovers' bodies meet. It is like water and oil coming together when two psyches meet. Yes, a better meeting, but still a subtle division. Two thoughts cannot occupy the same space. When you are thinking one thought, you cannot think another thought at the same time. The first thought will have to go, then only you will be able to pay attention to another thought. Only one thought can be in your mind at one time and at one space. So even friendship, psychological friendship, misses something, lacks something. It is better than the first, but nothing to be compared with the first. Spiritual penetration is the only possibility of really being one with someone. Because spirit means emptiness. Two emptinesses can be together. And why two? All the emptinesses of the world can be together in one space. They can occupy the same space simultaneously in the same time. There is no problem. Because they are neither concrete like objects nor liquid like waters, thoughts. They are simply empty of themselves. You can bring as many emptinesses together as possible. That's what happens around a master. When a Buddha exists in the world, thousands of people will become disciples. And sometimes disciples become worried. Just today there is a question from Nirgun that now people are coming from far away places and the ashram is becoming more and more crowded. How you will be able to give your love to your disciples? There are so many. The question seems relevant. It seems relevant from the physical point of view, but not from the spiritual point of view. I am not giving my love to anybody. I am simply love. If I am giving, then it must be a kind of thing, a quantity. Then certainly I can give only to so many, and then others will not be able to get it. It is not a quantity. It is simply a quality. It is not confined. It is not defined. It does not occupy any space. I am just emptiness. So whether one disciple is here or 1 million disciples are here will not make any difference. The difference, if it makes, will depend on the disciple. If he is not ready to dissolve with my emptiness, then he will miss. when you start feeling your emptiness joyously, remember, then you will be able to allow people to come close to you. Not only you will be able, you will always be welcoming, inviting. Because whenever somebody can come into you, the only way is if he allows you to come into him. There is no other way. If you want to come into me, the only way is to allow me to come into you. There is no other way. Sometimes it happens. Once a young man was with me for 2 years. He was deeply in love with a woman. They used to live together. Their parents were against. That's why they had taken shelter with me. I gave them one meditation, a simple meditation to do. The meditation was just to sit every day at least 2 times, morning, evening, at the fixed time, regularly, and look into each other's eyes and feel that you are going into the other. After the 6 month experiment, one day they went crazy. It happened. After 6 months regular experimentation, twice a day, it happened that the man went into the woman spiritually, and the woman went into the man spiritually, and then they became very much afraid. Now what will happen? The man started feeling like a woman, and the woman started feeling like a man. Their whole personality changed. Even their voice, the way they used to walk, suddenly changed. The man started walking like a woman, and the woman started walking like a man. The woman's voice became coarse, harsh, and the man's voice became very, very feminine. Naturally, they became very much afraid. And I had to give them an antidote technique to come back to themselves. For 3 days, they had to be confined into a room, not allowed to go outside, and continuously look into each other's eyes so that they can come back home. After 3 days, it happened. But those 3 days were crazy days. They could not understand what had happened. They became so disoriented. They missed a great blessing. And they became so afraid of me that when after 3 days they came back home to each other's self, they simply escaped without informing me. I have not seen them since then. Yes, it was a crazy phenomenon to feel that you have become the other, that you are no more the same person, that you are being possessed by the other, that your soul has left your body and somebody else's soul has entered. You can imagine. But they could not accept. That's why it became vicious. If they have accepted it, they would have learned a way. They came back, then they would have slowly, slowly learned the way to go each day into each other and come back. By and by, the passage would have become very, very smooth, and they would have known the knack of it. And I was giving them a great experiment that would have made for them the ultimate in orgasm possible, the spiritual orgasm. But they missed. That goes on happening around here every day. Whenever something starts happening, you become afraid, you start escaping. Remember it. When something is very frightening, remember this is the time not to go anywhere. This is the time to be here. When something frightening is happening, then something is happening. The moment is very pregnant. And you have to be here. And you have to go into it. This is a good insight that you ask, why do I feel fear when somebody comes close to me? You are becoming a little bit aware of your emptiness. Now let this awareness increase. Let this awareness become a great experience. Go into this emptiness and soon you will be surprised that this emptiness is what meditation is. This emptiness is what I call divinity, God. And then you will become a temple open to every stranger who wants to come in. The third question, why are you not a woman, but I am? Man and woman, that duality does not exist for me anymore. And if you go on working and go on moving inwards, it will not exist one day for you too. Men and women are only superficial things, biological. They don't go very deep. They are just skin deep. Deep inside, there is only one thing, consciousness. And the consciousness knows nothing of man and nothing of woman. It is simply conscious. But you become too much identified with the body. That's why the problem arises. Then you start thinking you are man, and you start thinking you are woman, and then you start thinking you are young or old, beautiful or ugly, healthy or ill. These are all misunderstandings. You live in the body, but you are not the body. The body is just your abode, your dwelling place. It is your nest. One day you will fly out of it. You will take shelter in some other nest. Many nests you have had in the past, many more you will be having in the future. Many, many bodies you have lived in, and many, many bodies you will be living in the future. You constantly go on changing your houses. When one house becomes rotten, dilapidated, you have to go and to find another, a younger house, more alive, with more potentiality for growth. I am no more identified with my body. So when you ask, why are you not a woman, you are asking an absurd question. I am neither man nor woman, or both. I am a transcendence. And that's what I would like you also to become, a transcendence. The body will remain man if you are a man, and the body will remain a woman if you are a woman. But that is only the shape of your house. Once you know that you are the witness of it all, you have transcended. That transcendence is freedom. But I understand the questioner is Ma Prem Madira. Her question is relevant in some other sense. He is asking why all enlightened people are men. Why not they are women? There have been enlightened women too. But the history does not record about them for a certain reason. The reason is that the history has been written by men. The reason is that it has been always against male ego to think of a woman as an enlightened woman. It was impossible for the male chauvinistic mind to think a woman as a master. Very rarely they had to accept. Because the phenomenon was so radiant, they had to accept. Once in a Mira, or in a Rabia, or in a Teresa, they have accepted it. But very reluctantly. Very, very reluctantly. Sometimes the reluctance has been so much that in Jnana tradition, one of the great Jnana masters was a woman. Mallibai was her name. But Jnanas have changed her name. They have made it Mallinath. They have changed her identity from she to he. There are 24 Tirthankaras, 23 are men, one is woman. They could not even tolerate that. They have changed the history. They say that she too was a man. It happens every day. History is changed. Just in this century, when Joseph Stalin came to power, he changed the whole history of revolution in Russia. Leon Trotsky's pictures were removed from everywhere, from all photographs. His name was removed from all history books. He was so completely removed that if anybody wanted to search, he would not have found a single reference anywhere that this man Leon Trotsky has ever existed. And he was one of the most important men of the revolution, next only to Lenin. Stalin was nobody, not at all important. But when he came into power and murdered Leon Trotsky, he changed the whole history. And then again it happened. When Stalin died and the power came to other people, they have changed the history again. Now Stalin no more exists. In Russian history books, Stalin no more exists. As if he never happened. Not even in footnotes. This has been happening down the ages always. People go on changing the history. When they are in power, they change the history. And whosoever is in power manages to have a certain kind of history that he wants to have. So the whole history is bunk. It has nothing to do with truth. It is all false. It is as fictitious as any fiction. For example, a man like Mahavira existed in India, but Hindus have not even mentioned his name in their books. Not even his name. Why? Such a great man, not even mentioned. If Jnanas had disappeared from the earth, then Mahavira would have disappeared. And because Jnanas are very few, only 30 lakhs, 3 million. does not matter as far as their number is concerned. Mahavira remains a very secondary figure. He is as important as Christ, as important as Buddha, as important as Krishna, as important as Muhammad. But he is not mentioned anywhere because the followers are so small, in such a minority. Who bothers about them? Christ looms large because half the earth is Christian. Buddha also looms large because the whole of Asia is Buddhist. Krishna also looms large because millions of Hindus are there, and so is the case with Muhammad. And Mahavira is as important as any of them. But still, at least his name continues. A footnote somewhere, a reference here and there. But there have been other masters of the same caliber whose names have completely disappeared because they never left a following behind them. Just in the days of Mahavira, there was a great teacher, Gosalka, opponent of Mahavira. He was almost like J. Krishnamurti. He did not believe that there should be any following. He did not believe in being a master or initiating people. He did not believe in creating a religion. So when he died, everything disappeared. Now his name does not exist anywhere except in the references made by Mahavira against him. Naturally, you cannot trust those statements. They are made by Mahavira or by those who were regarding Mahavira's statements, but they are regarded by the enemies. They cannot be trusted in. It is as if Joseph Stalin is making statements about Trotsky. Just think, if Adolf Hitler had won, the whole concept of history would have been different. Because he was defeated, there is a totally different kind of history written by Churchill and Stalin and Roosevelt, written by the enemies of Hitler. There exists no history which is impartial. Because there exists no historian who is impartial. And particularly about women masters, there has been always a conflict between man and woman. Man has never allowed woman to have her say in anything. Even if sometimes it happens that a woman became a master, became enlightened, she has not been regarded. And it was very much against the male ego to follow the woman. It was impossible for them. So great following never gathered together. And one thing more, you know about women. You can say, no man was going to follow Rabia. What about women? Why didn't they follow her? Women are so much against each other. It is very difficult. They can follow a man very easily. But just to follow another woman, that's impossible. Women are so jealous of each other. Women cannot believe that another woman has become enlightened. No woman believes that another woman can be beautiful. Women always talk about other women. They cannot believe if some man falls in love with some woman, no woman can believe what he is seeing in her. I don't see anything. And they all agree in it, that what he is seeing in her, that constant jealous state of mind, has been another barrier. So Rabia could not gather women followers, and naturally she could not gather men followers. She was as important a person as Buddha, Muhammad, Rumi, Kabir, Nanak. But this has been a misfortune. This should not be so in the future if you become a little more alert. The fourth question, if life is an interdependence and an organic whole, how can one awaken while the rest of humanity is fast asleep? The question is from Swami Yoga Chinmaya. Never ask any question that starts by if, because that is just a made up question, meaningless. You ask if life is an interdependence and an organic whole, how can one awaken while the rest of humanity is fast asleep? The question is knowledgeable. It is not innocent. First, when one awakens, one finds that one is not. When one awakens out of the idea that one was, out of the idea that one was separate. When one awakens, one disappears, and then there is no point in saying the rest of humanity. That's why Buddha has said, the day I became enlightened, whole existence became enlightened. Yes, that's how it is for Buddha. That's how it is for you. It has not become enlightened because you are fast asleep. In your sleep you think you are separate. The very idea of separation is part of sleep. In your sleep you think you are separate, and in your sleep you think the rest of humanity is separate from you. And in your sleep, you have heard me talking about the organic unity of existence. So in your sleep, a question arises. If life is an interdependence and an organic whole, how can one awaken while the rest of humanity is fast asleep? Yes, one can still awaken. But in the very awakening, one disappears. One does not awaken as one. One awakens as the whole. Asleep, you are one. Awake, only the whole. Lost in your dreams and desires and thoughts, you are separate. Those thoughts and dreams and desires create the separation. Once those thoughts and dreams and desires have disappeared, there is no separation, nothing to divide you. And in that moment you see all is already awakened. Existence is already enlightened. That's why Bodhidharma is said to have laughed for years when he became enlightened. A very strange laughter. People used to ask him, why you go on laughing? And he would say, it is so ridiculous that everybody is enlightened and everybody is seeking enlightenment. And everybody is already there where everybody wants to reach and go. It is so ridiculous. Everybody is already happy and searching for happiness. And just because of the search is missing his happiness which is already there. Everybody is running here and there, looking for something that he has inside himself. It is so ridiculous, he used to say, Bodhidharma. That's why I go on laughing. There have been other masters who will hit you if you ask them how to become enlightened. Rinzai hit a man because he has asked how to become a Buddha. When he hit him, the man was puzzled. He said, "Have I asked something wrong?" And Rinzai said, "What more there can be? What more wrong there is possible? What more absurdity one can ask? You want to become a Buddha? You are already a Buddha. How a Buddha can become Buddha? The very effort is futile. Hence I have hit you," Rinzai says, "so that I can give you a little piece of awakening, a shock. Maybe in that shock you can see that you are a Buddha already." The whole existence is one. If you think it is separate, it is just an idea. If you think you are not enlightened, that too is just an idea. Enlightenment is already the case, because only God exists. So rather than asking how it is possible, you try to awake. Just a little bit of awareness, a little gap, a little interval of being conscious, and suddenly you will see that yes, that's how it is. I am not, and there is no division between me and the whole. All is one, intertwined, interdependent. But I can understand your difficulty. When you see on the surface of the ocean millions of waves, and if those waves were conscious like you, then each wave will think, "I am separate from the other wave." And it will be as logical as your question is logical. Because each wave will say that I am separate, I can see it. And it can prove also. The wave can say that when the other wave disappears, I remain. So how it is possible if we were together and the same, in the disappearance of the other, I will also disappear? Or I disappear but other waves remain. So how we can be together? That's what you are asking. A man dies. Now he can ask. You can ask. If he is one with the whole existence, then how can he die alone? The whole existence should die. A child is born, and you can ask, "This child is born," but the whole existence is not born with him. It has been there already. So how it is possible? Just watch the ocean. Go and sit on the shore and watch the ocean. One wave arises, it does not make all the waves arise. One wave disappears, it does not mean other waves will disappear. But can't you see that all waves are one in the ocean? They are joined together. They are interdependent. Can you make it happen that there is only one wave on the surface of ocean and all the waves have disappeared? Can you make it happen? One wave cannot exist alone. It will need millions of waves around it to keep it afloat. Otherwise it will disappear. Waves don't come alone. They come in a great crowd. Have you ever seen single wave? Nobody has ever seen a single wave on the ocean. Whenever they exist in multiplicity. One wave means many waves. Because a wave is a waving, it is a process. When one wave is there, many ripples will arise around it and they will become waves. But all waves are joined in the ocean. They are one and organic. Can you take a wave away from the ocean? Can you bring it home? It will be no more a wave. Yeah, water you can bring. But water is not wave. The moment you take the wave off the ocean, it is just water. The wave has disappeared. That shape, that roaring quality, that dance, that form, that beauty, that sound, all have disappeared. You cannot take the wave away from the ocean. And you cannot have the ocean without the waves. They are together. They are a togetherness. Even to say they are together is not right, because the word together again gives the idea as if they are two. They are not two. It is the same energy. That is the meaning when I say life is organic. It is one. We are waves. God is the ocean. But we can look at ourselves in two ways. One is, we can think ourselves as separate. That's what I call sleep. Or we can think ourselves as one. That's what is known as enlightenment. To know the truth is to become enlightened. To cling to a lie is to remain unenlightened. One who becomes enlightened, for him everybody has become enlightened in the same moment. Then the whole existence is made of the stuff called enlightenment for him. But you have your private fantasies. You can go on remaining. I declare it to you that in my enlightenment you have become enlightened. It can't be otherwise. In my enlightenment the whole existence has become enlightened. Since that moment I have never thought for a single moment. I cannot. It is impossible to conceive anybody as unenlightened. But you can have your private fancies and fantasies, and you can go on believing that you are unenlightened. That much freedom is yours. You can go on being deluded. But that is your private creation, your invention. Reality is not in support of it. That's why it is so miserable. You are without support in your ideas. You know the proverb? It exists in all the languages of the world, in some form or other. People say, man proposes and God disposes. Your propositions are so foolish, absurd. It is not that God disposes them. Just because they are foolish, stupid, irrelevant to reality, you yourself dispose them in the very proposals. You say, I am. Now, you are saying something so utterly nonsense that it is disposed by its very statement. You are not. Now, God is not at fault. Don't say God disposes it. Your statement was so utterly false that it will not find any support from anywhere. It is against the truth. So if you want to keep it, you will have to struggle hard. You will have to be continuously fighting for it. Then too it will go on slipping again and again. And you will think God is against me and disposing my idea. Nobody is disposing. It is as if the trees are green and you have a fantasy that they are red. Now whenever you will open eyes, they are green. So you will have to keep your eyes shut. Only with closed eyes you can go on imagining they are red. But whenever, for a single moment you will open your eyes, you will think God is against me and he goes on disposing my idea. I said trees are red and he goes on insisting that they are green. God is not doing anything. Trees are simply green. Just your idea is your idea, your invention. And your invention is such, it is such a lie. It can't have any support. The greatest lie is the ego. To think that I am is the greatest fiction ever invented. Just go into it and try to find out where it is, this I. Watch where it is. You will never find it anywhere. Nobody has ever been able to find it. If you go in and search for it, you will be very much puzzled. It is not there at all. It simply does not exist. But you can go on creating props for it. You can have much money and then you can have a bigger eye. And you can have a bigger post and you can have a bigger eye. And you can create a great kingdom and you can have a bigger eye. You can become very knowledgeable and you can have a bigger eye. Or you can become an ascetic, a Mahatma, and you can have a bigger eye. But these are all supports that you are doing. And God will go on disposing, disposing in the sense because truth cannot support the lie. Your very idea is so inauthentic, it cannot have any nourishment from existence. That's why you will be in miserable. You will be in misery. Continuously you will feel I am defeated, defeated again and again, and there is frustration. But you are creating your frustration. In your very expectation, you sow the seeds of frustration. In your very desire to be, you create death. In your very desire that I am, you create enmity with existence. See, go in, watch, try to find out where it is. Nobody has ever been able to find. Buddha went in, could not find it. Came out and said to people, there is no self. And since that moment, there was no misery. Because he is no more holding any lie against the truth of existence. So there is no conflict. Now, there is only harmony. And in harmony is happiness. Those who have gone within themselves have unexceptionally declared that there is no I to be found anywhere. It is a very unfounded thing. And it creates misery. To be in a lie is to be miserable. To be in truth is to be blissful. The fifth question, your words are such a delight in my heart, how can they be lies? First, lies can be very delightful and delicious. In fact, lies are more delightful and delicious than truths. So that is no point. Truth is more shocking. Truth is more annihilating. Truth is like a fire. It will burn you. But that is not the meaning of what I have said to you. What I am saying is truth, but when you hear it and interpret it, it becomes a lie. I am not saying that Buddha has been telling lies or Muhammad has been telling lies, but people have been hearing lies. When I say something, it is my experience. If you believe it, it is a lie. Unless you experience it on your own, it will remain a lie. All beliefs are lies. Belief is a hindrance. That is the whole approach of Sufism, the basic approach. That all beliefs are lies. Experiment, experience, only then, and only then they become true. They become true only when you have lived them. Through your life they attain the quality of truth. I am saying something. I have known what love is, and I say something to you. You will be only hearing it. It will not be a lived experience. Yeah, you may feel delighted with the very idea, with the very poetry, with the very vision of love. You may feel delighted. It may start great dreams in you. It may become a great ideal in you. It may put you again back into a world of hope. It may help you to be less depressed. It may help you to be less in despair. It may give you dreams. It will be a delight. You may feel it as beautiful. But that is not going to help. When I am talking about love, there are two possibilities. One is, you simply hear my words, they soothe, they console, they fall like thin rain, and you feel joyous. Then you have heard only my poetry, and this is not going to help much. It will be a kind of drug. You enjoy my words. You enjoy the rhythm of those words. You enjoy the vision contained in those words. But that will be a kind of spiritual entertainment. Nothing of much value. The other way is, when I am talking about love, you watch where you are. And you will find yourself full of hate. When I am talking about love, let that love become an indication towards your hate. Let that idea of love provoke all that you go on carrying on in the name of love. Let that be a challenge. Then it will hurt. It will not be so delicious. It will hurt. It will be painful. It will open your wounds. But then it will be helpful. Because then a change has started. A transformation has started. Don't listen to me as if you are listening to poetry or music. Listen to me as one should listen to death. Listen to me as one should listen to transformation. I bring you a message of transformation, not a drug to soothe you. I don't bring a tranquilizer to you. So when my words hurt you, it is far better. Because then there is a possibility of some change happening. When my words become painful to you, unbearably painful, then there is going something really good to happen. Because those words will make you aware of your reality, where you are, and those words will make you clear where you should be, how things should be and how things are. And the gap, when you will recognize it, will hurt you, will open your wounds. You live in hate. You go on talking about love. Your love is just a facade. Behind it is hidden jealousy, domination, possessiveness, and all kinds of illnesses. Your love is neurotic. It kills you, it kills the others. It is not love at all. You don't know what love is. So when I talk about love, listen very carefully so that it can make you aware of your fact, your reality. Don't start thinking that you have understood what I am talking about. You cannot understand unless you experience it. There is no other understanding than experience. Yes, intellectually you will be able to understand what I am saying because I am speaking a very simple language, the simplest possible. Everything is clear whatsoever I am saying. But what I am saying is so profound that unless you dive deep into it through experience, it will remain only an intellectual idea in the mind. You say, your words are such a delight in my heart, how can they be lies? Now, the question is from Arup. She certainly listens from the heart. There are very few people who listen from the heart. People listen from the head. Even the very idea to listen from the heart seems to be very unscientific and absurd. How one can listen from the heart? The ears exist in the head. The heart has no ears. How one can hear from the heart? But to hear me, the only way is to hear from the heart. And if you hear me from the heart, then you can enjoy both the pain of it and the joy of it. Then you can enjoy both the shock of it and the promise of it. Then the promise will thrill you with joy. That's what must be happening in Arup's heart. The promise, the possibility, the opening of the door that you need not remain in a hopeless state. That God happens, that love happens, that prayer is not nonsense, that there is a sense in it, that life is not meaningless, that there is a significance in it. One has to search for it and discover it. Yes, there are 1001 thorns, true, but still rose flowers bloom. That very possibility becomes a thrill, an adventure in the heart. In the head, it will become just a concept. In the heart, it will become a dance. So if you can hear from the heart, then this question takes another meaning. Then it is right. Your words are such a delight in my heart, how can they be lies? They are not lies. If you hear from the heart. First I talked that they will be lies if you hear from the head. Now, this other possibility, a rare possibility, if you hear from the heart, with great sympathy, and rapport with me, almost one with me. Your heart pulsating with my heart, heart to heart. If you hear, then they are no more lies. Because then you have heard them in the same meaning and sense as I am uttering them. Then you have not interpreted them. The heart cannot interpret. The heart is so innocent. The heart cannot interpret. The heart knows no knowledge. The heart is so utterly ignorant. That is its beauty, that it cannot corrupt it by knowledge. Then it remains truth. If you hear me from the heart, then my truth becomes your truth, because your heart becomes my heart. But if you hear from the head, then whatsoever I say immediately turns into a lie. Your head is a great mechanism to make lies out of truth. It is a converter. It immediately puts in the slit machine of the head anything, and it simply corrupts it, colors it, changes it, makes something which was not there, creates something which was not there, and destroys something which was there. And something absolutely different arises in your mind. That's what interpretation is. If you can listen from the heart, then certainly your question is relevant. Then you will be very, very joyful. Yes, the pain will be felt, but even that pain is a growth pain. That too is also a joy. To feel it is to feel that one is alive. To feel it is to feel that one is on an adventure. Yes, all adventures are dangerous. All adventures are risky. All adventures are insecure. But only through that insecurity and risk, life takes a grandeur, a splendor. Only through that risk, life remains fresh. Only through that challenge, one goes on being alive. When the challenge dies, how can you remain alive? You fall asleep. There is nothing to keep you awake. Listen from the heart, there will be a great delight. In fact, when you listen my words from your heart, there are no more words. When you listen from the heart, you listen to my wordless message. Then words are irrelevant. The heart cannot listen to the words. There is no mechanism. Words go into the head. They are sorted out in the head, interpreted, classified, condemned, appreciated, criticized, believed in, or disbelieved in. All that work happens in the head. Words go into the head. But if the word has something wordless in it, if the word has been uttered by a man who is beyond words, then something of his silence goes on hanging around the words. Then something of his silence, like a flavor, a fragrance, goes with the word. The word goes in the head, the fragrance goes in the heart. The word goes in the head, the flavor goes in the heart. The word goes in the head, the wordless message goes into the heart. The container goes into the head and the content goes into the heart. Then there is great joy, great delight. And Arup is right. Your words are such a delight in my heart. How can they be lies? If you hear from the heart, you cannot hear the lies. Because the heart has no way to interpret. The heart simply trusts. The heart is Shraddha, trust, faith. If you listen from the head, you are a student. If you listen from the heart, you are a disciple. If you listen from the head, you will go on missing me. If you listen from the heart, then there is no way to miss me. Then you have arrived. the last question. What to do when you die? Stay together and run the risk that the movement will turn into a still sort of religion, or dissolve and be open for the call of another living master? The question is from Swami Anand Adi. First, have you heard my call yet? The living master is confronting you. Have you heard my call yet? And if you cannot hear my call, what hope is there that you will hear some other living master's call? The very idea shows that you are missing me. Otherwise, who bothers about death? If you have listened to me, there is no death. If you have heard me at all, in that very hearing, death has disappeared. Why you are concerned about my death? How can I die? I am no more. Death is possible only to the ego. Yes, the body will disappear. But I cannot disappear. Raman Maharishi was dying, and a disciple started crying. And Raman opened his eyes and said, "What is the matter? Why are you crying?" And the disciple said, "Bhagwan, you are leaving us. It is unbearable." And in that great pain, because he was suffering from a throat cancer, it was very difficult even to speak. So Raman laughed. And he said, "But where can I go? I will be here as I am right now. Where can I go? You tell me. There is nowhere to go. There is no one to go." And the same I say to you, Adi. How can I die? The one who could die is already gone. And the one who cannot die is here confronting you. But it seems you are missing me. Because you are missing, you think, what will happen to me when Bhagwan is gone? Rather than being concerned with that, be concerned right now what is happening to you when Bhagwan is here. And that should be the concern. When I am here and you are here, then let there be a meeting. Let there be a dissolution. Let there be a communion. What nonsense you are asking, what to do when you die? Do something while I am here. And I don't care a bit what you will be doing when I am gone. If you cannot do anything while I am here, what can be hoped about you? If you go on missing me while I am alive, naturally you will go on missing me while I am dead. It will not make much difference to you. And it will not make much difference to others who are not missing me right now. They will never miss me. Even when I am gone, I will be there in their heart as alive as ever. Once you are really in contact with a living master, that living master becomes your living master forever. Then there is no need. But if you are not in contact, naturally you will have to find somebody else. In fact, you are already finding. This very question shows that you are already worried and the search has started. In fact, you are asking me, Bhagwan, you die soon, so I can find another living master. That's what your question really means. If you want, I can do that. Just for your sake, I can die. So you will be free to find another master. But you are free right now. Have I to die for you to make you free? You are free. If you are not feeling any contact with me, then who is holding you here? Then don't deceive yourself. You are absolutely free. I am nobody's bondage. I am here to liberate you, not to create a prison for you. If you cannot make a heart-to-heart contact with me, then escape from here. This place is not for you. Your question is very clear. It says, what to do when you die? Stay together and run the risk that the movement will turn into a stale sort of religion, or dissolve and be open for the call of another living master. If you have heard me, there is no need to worry. If you have not heard me, then there is every need to escape from here. Then I am not for you. But think of this moment. Don't be worried about the future. That is none of your concern. Second thing, each religion becomes by and by a church, has to become by the very nature of things. While the master is alive, it is one thing. When the master is gone, it is quite another. But those who had loved the master, for them the master is always there. Still, the people who had loved Raman Maharishi, the master is there. They still have the same feel when they go to Arunachal, his place, his mountains, and when they sit near his samadhi. It has still the same fragrance, the same freshness, the same presence, the same radiance. And Raman still answers, and Raman still instructs, and Raman still comes into their dreams, into their visions. That for them there is no need to go anywhere. They have found their master. There are others also who go to Raman's place. He is no more present there. They think he is dead. They know that he is dead. It is only a graveyard now, an old temple, relics. They cling to the sect. They still cherish the idea that they are followers of Raman. They are the dead people. It is good if they should find some new master, because with the old they missed. They should find a new master. So I cannot make a categorical statement what you are to do when I am gone. Those who have contacted me, for them I will never be gone. And for those who have not contacted me, I am already gone. They should leave right now. They should not wait for my death. Yes, after death they have to leave. I am saying they should leave right now. Don't waste your time. It depends on you whether when I am gone my religion will remain alive or not. It depends on you. To few it will be dead, to them it is still dead. To few it will remain alive, to them it is still alive and it will be alive forever. So each one has to decide for himself. If you still feel when I am gone that I am there to help you, I will be there to help you. If you feel I am no more there to help you, Naturally, you have to choose another master. And I am saying you have to choose right now. Why wait for that moment? I may not die so soon. People like me are unpredictable. I may die tomorrow, I may not die so soon. So don't depend on that. You just listen to your own heart. If your heart is growing with me, blooming, new foliage coming, new buds opening, then I am your master. If it is not happening, then seek and search somewhere else with all my blessings. Enough for today.